The coal mine argument, is this our future we're looking at?
Even in Newtok, a village that's far ahead of most in terms of planning to move, relocation is many years and still many dollars away. Other villages have no high ground nearby and no land to swap. And despite his tireless optimism, Stanley Tom looks around at his sinking village and can't help wondering why no one seems to care.
Well, we're United States citizens, we're the taxpayers, we have military that serve the Iraq war, so we should be a recognition. Nobody can erase us. I think we ought to be the priority, you know, if we're being wiped out, you know, who's going to replace us?
I'm Elizabeth Arnold, and this is Encounters.
That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to a segment of Encounters, Radio Experiences in the North, which is a weekly program available to all public radio stations. Elizabeth Arnold wrote and narrated this segment. It was edited and produced by Lisa Bush. Music by Outback. Funding came from the North Pacific Research Board and the National Science Foundation. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the country, bringing you local radio productions of national interest. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. Thanks for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. Coming up next, it's Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. That's with me, Robert Norris. I'll be with you for 2 hours. We got lots of varied things happening. You can call in at 427-3772, 427-FRSC. Or you can just listen and rant at the radio as you wish. Stay tuned. And that was the inimitable Phil Free, who has a radio show himself on this station. I believe it is on, what is it, Tuesday night, Monday night? I'm just trying to stare at this grubbed up schedule on the wall, and I can't tell you. However, Free Radio Santa Cruz is online, freakradio.org, and you can get the latest schedule for Free Radio as well as make an application to be a broadcaster, as well as contribute some buckaroonies to the station, because I haven't checked the latest report, but word has it we're supposed to be pumping you guys and gals for cash, because we need money to continue to update the CD equipment, you know, pay those large bribes to people in power, and of course pay for those massages that are so important for a Free Radio broadcaster to be completely relaxed on the air. No, actually, we just need the money in order to pay the rent and for the equipment. So kick down freakradio.org. You can do that, or you can give a check to FRSC, P.O. Box 7507, 95061. FRSC, Post Office Box 7507, Santa Cruz, 95061. Call-in number here is 427-3772. I'm going to begin the show, methinks, with some interviews from the street. I think that's what this is. Yes, that's what this is. And first, a quick report or two. I went to a Santa Cruz City Council candidate shindig. Well, Santa Cruz neighbors threw a forum. I think it was the last forum of the season for the Santa Cruz City Council election, which is coming up on the 4th. 9 of the 10 candidates were there, and it was recorded both video and audio, although mainly because of the efforts of myself and Coral Bruin. We have a phone call, though, so I'll interrupt my interruptions to perhaps interrupt the speaker. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert, it's Uncle Dennis here.
Hey, Uncle Dennis.
I just wanted to let you and our listeners know that we're making good progress towards solving our financial problems, but we do need continuing, sustaining contributors, folks that can make a pledge or a promise to Free Radio Santa Cruz to donate $5, $10, $15, or $20 a month and do it every month in 2009, and that way we can make it. So thanks for a great show, Robert, and I hope the tape that you play tonight will be not the one that Carl played this afternoon, because that was totally inaudible.
Oh, no, this is a somewhat more audible tape, but it was a little hard to hear, a little kind of tinny, wasn't it? Yeah.
Well, people need to get the microphone close to the speakers, or else get a what's known as the shotgun microphone, so that you can actually hear what's going on.
I think a shotgun would be more appropriate for these candidates, actually.
A shotgun microphone.
Well, thank you, Uncle Dennis. I think I'm not going to be playing a lot. Frankly, I don't have a lot of patience with the candidates, as you probably know. But there is some.
Oh, no, really?
What's that?
I would think that, you know, some of those candidates would be candidates that you'd really want to have.
Well, I know. I mean, you know, people like Tim Fitzmaurice, who I'm, what, in my seventh year of court against in federal court, is one of my favorites. And there's Catherine Byers, who torpedoed the sleeping ban. Tony Madrigal, who sat on the police review board for 4 years and did absolutely nothing. I mean, it's a quite a lineup of people, I got to tell you. But,
well, just to let us know, you know, because the election is just a little bit over a week away, which city council candidates do you recommend? And I'll take my answer on the air.
Okay, Dennis. Frankly, I recommend that Uncle Dennis himself is a far better choice than any of the candidates running, really. He probably knows more about this. He has more of a sense of the pulse of the community. He's been certainly on the air talking to the community about a variety of issues, and particularly about some issues I think are important ones for a variety of years. And most important, Uncle Dennis has a sense of rhythm, as you will learn when you tune in to Uncle Dennis between 8 and 11 tonight, when he will be doing From the Cream to the Dregs. So frankly, I think the field is pretty darn limited. It's better to vote for no one than to vote for people you don't want to. In fact, there have been suggestions that the lower the vote count on let's say, the major presidential candidates, the congressional candidate Farr, who is, of course, voting for the war and voting for the massive bailout to Wall Street, or the city council clowns. I mean, you have some minority candidates who are running who might be worth a look. Simba Kenyatta, Craig Canada, Jay Cabrera. But in the main, you have recycled candidates, the ones that are backed by the money and likely to win. So I would say, you know, if you vote, definitely vote for the initiatives. Don't not go to the polls. Vote against measure Proposition 8 and a number of other measures that are coming up. And we're actually hoping to have a show on Sunday. I'm trying to get our old lefty political commentator, Steve Argue, Steadfast Steve, I think I called him that at one time, on the air to do a little item-by-item analysis of the ballot so you can get at least somebody's point of view. But again, it really is up to you, not so much on Election Day, but the day before and the day after and every day before that and after that, that really counts, as I continue to blather about on my show. And that's my response. But you can call in with your thoughts, 427-3772. Here's some thoughts from some folks on the street.
In the Northeast Coast,
yes.
If you have less than $80 in your pocket from Pennsylvania all the way up to Massachusetts, you'll be arrested for vagrancy.
How do you know this?
Because it's one of their laws, and a cop told us while we were hitchhiking down the road. We didn't happen to have $80 at the time, but he let us off with a warning saying if he caught us out on the highway, he would arrest us next time.
You must remember, police don't always tell you the truth. And vagrancy laws like that are unconstitutional, so he might be saying that he would like to do that, or he would like to see you believe that, but I don't think that's true.
I heard this from at least every one single backpacker in every state that I was going to, though.
Man, to see the law.
Vagrancy laws.
We're out here on the tarmac here, I should say, on the sidewalk down on Pacific and Lincoln. It's about 15 to 11 on October 20th, actually, the last day to register to vote. You have one more hour before registration closes. They're actually standing in front of the county building with their registration forms if you want to register to vote in California. Not that there's much to register for, although the initiative is really worth voting on. And I'm down here in front of the closed Cafe Campesino talking with
Travis.
Thank you, Travis. Giving a report on the vagrancy law situation, according to a traveler. There's a man with a guitar, another man eating some yogurt, and another guy leaning or actually standing next to a drum. Looks like a pretty all-male group, except maybe for two or three women. About 5, 10, 15, about 20 of us here. No sign of the polizei. There's first alarm.
Yep, definitely.
First alarm is a private security force that harasses people at the various shopping centers around the county. Some people call them first attack.
I also realized that when I was hitchhiking across the country, there are very, very many laws about people hitchhiking. In some places in Colorado, they have these big lit-up signs that are all about not picking up hitchhikers. It says, hitchhiking prohibited, do not pick up hitchhikers. And that's for a good 70 or 80 miles in Colorado.
You recently came across the country?
Yeah, I went across over to Maine to visit my family, and then I visited my sister in Boston, and then I just got back.
Scofflaw that you are.
Yeah, I just got back 3 days ago.
Well, welcome back, Travis.
Thank you very much.
Any unusual experiences on the way?
Well, I did get a ride from a person that was from military intelligence, but he couldn't tell me anything.
He was a big dummy.
Yes. And I also got a ride from a special forces person.
Special forces, go ahead.
And both of these people were inactive. Well, one of them was active and one of them was waiting to be reenacted, actually. He had all his gear in the back. And none of them could talk about what their job really
certainly
was.
Certainly not. It's top secret, son.
But those were the only rides we got in Colorado.
Boy, you, Travis.
No problem.
And you're not getting much positive response from your local audience here.
Oh, that's okay.
Any commentary?
R-E-W-N. Ron. Like Fawn Lawn. R-E-W-N. Daring. A.K.A. Norman Alabalas.
What's the update, Ron? Anything exciting?
Kicked out of jail again.
Kicked out of jail. That's getting pretty low. How did that happen?
I don't know. I went to jail for 97 days and 32 days back to back.
And when did you have to leave jail?
Saturday at 7:30 in the morning.
So we're now on Monday, I guess.
Right.
So what would you have preferred to stay in jail?
Forever.
What is it about the Santa Cruz County Jail that entices you?
It's a Club Med. Just give me a 1971 Playboy magazine. I can live there forever.
So what did you get jail for? What kind of crimes were they holding you for?
Urinating in public. Indecent exposure, they called it. Failure to appear on that. Failure to appear on tobacco at San Lorenzo Park because I didn't know you couldn't smoke. Got a ticket. I had 5 tickets. I said, I think I'll go to the Club Med, River Street, Mexican Whorehouse Restaurant called Water Street. No comprehendo. No speaking glano.
Now, you're becoming a little unintelligible even to me. Can you clarify that comment?
I don't need an interpreter.
Fair enough. Well, any comments to those who are out here on the streets? Any report from the jail about what's happening in there?
Jail is safer than out here.
How are the guards treating you in jail?
Like Betty Boop, fucking olive oil in the ass.
What cell block were you on?
C.
And how about the other inmates? How they treat you?
There's only a total of 16 of us.
So are there actually as many beds as inmates at this point?
I get a private room.
Well, how come you get special privileges?
Because if you put me in there, I'll kill everybody in there.
So you are a known killer?
No, I was on my way to OSP when they were filming One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest for dealing 17.3 kilos of ganja pot to an old girlfriend of mine who pot.
This is pretty old history, right?
No.
Well, come on. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest was 30 years ago.
No, it wasn't.
I think so. Unless you got a new film version you're talking about.
I have One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest 2, Revenge of Little Chief. I have it right here. The black guy goes, oh, Chief isn't dead. He runs off, knocks up a white girl, and Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie with Jennifer Aniston.
And this is sort of a comic relief but not terribly funny example of a conversation I had at the what's called the 10 o'clock club outside New Leaf when you have the... how would you put it? Drunks, skunks, punks, and travelers, and folks trying to stay warm at night and have a little music and company with each other on the sidewalk. Police have reportedly been more tolerant recently than before. And Ron, who is our guest comedian on the street, although I don't know if he's trying to be funny or just babbling, actually, often has some succinct and interesting reports from a jail and elsewhere. This time it's a little more incoherent, so I'm going to attempt to skip ahead to something a little bit more pertinent. And while I do that, perhaps a little bit of a musical interlude. Let's do something that's perhaps familiar to those of you who know the show, but hey, sometimes the old is the best. The oldest is the bestest. Anyway. But first, a quick phone call from who knows who. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. Madison.
Madison, what's new? I walked by your house and saw a variety of signs and things painted on vehicles announcing your candidacy for the presidency and also support of City Council candidate Craig Canada.
Yeah, and I'm Ryan. And
Ryan Coonerty?
Yeah, I voted Craig, Ryan, and...
You are a wild and crazy woman, Madison, I must say.
Well, I voted too old and too new, because you can't have everybody new, because you still need some direction.
Something old, something new, something shitty, something poo, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and I'm having an earring sale for Halloween.
You're having a what?
An earring sale for Halloween.
An earring sale. I gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So if anyone wants to come down for Halloween earrings, I have
and
them.
And now your tienda casa is on Maple Street, right?
Yeah, I'm running my campaign from my porch in Maple Street, and we're trying to do an email blast around the country. So if everyone would email their friends that I'm running for president, and the reason I am is I feel that I have brighter ideas than McCain and Obama. And
well, that's
also,
not saying much, you know. I gotta
well,
tell you.
I do. Let me finish. They've also violated the campaign finance laws, both McCain and Obama, so people need to email the U.S. Attorney and the Superior Court and or the Supreme Court and the
Don't you think that would be kind of a waste of energy, Madison? I mean, are they going to listen to people? But in any case, you know, if people want
to... It's a law. It's a law.
But if people want to talk to you, they certainly can drop in at your, you know, for a chat on the porch. You're on Maple between, I guess, it's Cedar and Center Streets, right?
Yeah, and I also, I'm 6-1 right now with my signatures. 6-1 ratio over Obama.
Oh, there you go.
I mean, it's shocking. So you can do. I mean, I've worked on all four levels of government, worked at two of the best run cities, best run county
well,
in
let's,
the nation.
Let's dump that and look at the issue of how would you favor more bombing and or less bombing of Pakistan? What's your position on that?
Oh, Pakistan! I believe they should get out and leave the I think that you can. The British underground needs to be pulled out.
What about
the
American
underground
troops?
Is one of our biggest problems.
How about the American troops? What do you think? More troops in Afghanistan and Pakistan like Obama and McCain want or not?
No, I think that it should be all switched to UN forces and just secure borders until people feel comfortable and the trade can happen.
Okay, so you want to remove the troops from abroad?
Yes. Absolutely.
Okay. Well, you know, frankly, on that issue, we agree, and I appreciate that. Maybe you can get some folks to, maybe you can lead some demonstrations on that issue on November 5th, because whoever we get for Fuhrer, they're going to be pushing for more troops. At least that's what their positions are.
Well, if anyone wants to build a website for me, that would be great. I'll, you know, come down and talk to me. Mm-hmm. And anyone who can do email blasts, Fitzgerald is my
last name. I don't really support you as a presidential candidate, but I do support...
You should.
But, well, perhaps. But I would rather support... I think we all need to support each other in getting the U.S. out of Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. And we're going to need to do that. Well, we've needed to do that for the last 4 or 5 years and haven't done it successfully. Now we have to start doing it even more. Thanks
well,
for calling in.
One of the kids.
Thanks for calling in, Madison. I'm going to cut you off now. That's it for me for now.
Okay.
All righty, babe. And I don't mean to be mean. I just mean to move along here. Here's a little bit of, again, 15 and the song Land.
For only one reason, the president raises the question, who wants a... The homeless, our problem, for only one reason. Our president raises the question, who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be 90 million dead Indians? Who owns the land? Could it be 6 million?
And who owns the land? And the answer is Everyone does, really, or no one, if you will. It should be for public use. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse. You're listening to Bathrobes Pierre's Broadside. That's the name of my show. I'll be here until 8 o'clock. Let's see, it is Thursday night, so maybe something special is happening that I should be advising folks about. That would be a hoot if I weren't, and I should probably be getting it together and doing that, but the computer is a little slow tonight. It's not coming up as quickly as I would have hoped, but it is coming up. Let's see what we got here. I always often go to my old, one of the websites I do a lot of writing for, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. There is something happening tonight. Transition Santa Cruz, the power of community at the Native Sons Hall on High Street. That's at the very bottom of High Street. It's Transition Santa Cruz, the local grassroots movement that aims to prepare Santa Cruz for living well without fossil fuels, is presenting the documentary film The Power of Community. That's in about half an hour this month as part of their awareness-raising campaign. The Power of Community portrays the groundbreaking, literally, response of the people of Cuba to the loss of imported oil after the collapse of the Soviet Union. Cuba rapidly developed an extensive system of organic gardens and farms in both urban and rural areas and recovered from what could have been a famine-inducing crisis. The members of Transition Santa Cruz hope we can learn from this experience. Transition Santa Cruz was started by a small group of concerned citizens last summer as part of an international network of transition initiatives begun several years ago in England. These initiatives aim to foster resilience, the ability of a community to thrive despite major challenges such as climate disruptions and the loss of fossil fuels as usable energy sources. What makes the transition approach stand out among all sorts of schemes for sustainability is that it so thoroughly and enjoyably involves the community in addressing the very problems that most of us have been feeling so hopeless about, says Michael Levy, one of the members of Transition Santa Cruz. The enthusiasm in the room is palpable when members or people hear about the transition approach. Well, the transition initiative, which seems custom-made for Santa Cruz, has actually caught on in a surprising number and variety of localities. In the U.S., there are now about 120 cities working on transition initiatives. And rather than give more advertising for this group that I know nothing about, again, I advise you and encourage you to, if you do go, to give a report back as to whether it's worth a shit. At the Native Sons Hall, 239 High Street, that's at 7 o'clock tonight until 9 o'clock, Transition Santa Cruz, The Power of Community, a film about Cuba and weaning themselves from fossil fuels. It's participatory. Audience members will be invited to get to know each other by pairing and conversing for segments of the evening and to share their ideas for a resilient Santa Cruz by speaking out in the group or writing down their thoughts and posting them on the wall. You know, I like actually talking about movies after I come out of them. I'm so addicted to movies and we all kind of stagger out of the movies and don't look at each other, and it's kind of hard. Sometimes I say, "What'd you think?" And they say, "Oh, it was good," you know, and that was pretty much it. But this sounds like an interesting response, although it sounds like it's designed to further a particular group, Transition Santa Cruz. But who knows, maybe it's worth furthering. Again, that's 7 o'clock tonight, 239 High Street. That's the very bottom of High Street next to the pedestrian bridge, as advertised on Santa Cruz Indie Media. There's going to be a mystery bike ride on Friday night at 5:30. And the details of that are you meet at the corner of Pacific and Cooper Streets. That's in downtown Santa Cruz at 5:30. Ride starts at 6. Dia de los Muertes is the magical Mexican tradition of celebrating the lives of your dead loved ones and partying down with them one more time. Join your fellow Velorutionaries, I guess Velocity Rutionaries, as we ride into the sunset to honor, celebrate, and party with our dead, hopefully not creating any more dead as they go. We will be stopping to bring an altar or ofrenda to those bike riders who have pedaled off into eternity or been knocked off by vehicles, I guess. So bring mementos, candles, paper flowers, marigolds, photos, cedar wine, cookies, reflectors, a friend, etc. Do decorate yourself and bikes. A bike as skeletons or dead people or possibly, you know, zombies like the city council candidates. Like are the current city council members. Like all mystery rides, our destinations are a mystery. Again, Pacific and Cooper, 5:30 tomorrow. Noche de los Muertos. Viernes, as we say, el 24 de octubre, or something like that. Also, at the same time, there's the United Nations Day dinner, First Congregation Church, to honor Ruth Hunter, but you got to have $25 to $50, so watch out. Music by the Raging Grannies, catered by India Joe's. Probably cheaper to just shout, "I love Ruth Hunter," and go to the drum circle, which, by the way, had its afternoon, Wednesday afternoon, yesterday, with no incident except the ever-anal repressive forces of the police and the Coonerty staff at City Council continue to put up these little green mesh fences to discourage people from using the area in parking lot number 4 next to the farmer's market where people usually drum, sit, chat, eat, and so forth. And, of course, they were torn down, according to my informant. I didn't bother to go to this one because it looks like the community is doing just fine without my help, and there are other things I'd rather be doing, like sleeping or eating or any other of the more basic carnal functions. So, good. Good work, community. You took back the space. Now all you have to do is take back the other 10 blocks that Ryan Coonerty, our mayor, in his mania for safety. It isn't even a mania for safety. It's a politically opportunistic use of paranoia, similar to what President Bush and wannabe Presidents McCain and Obama are using in their cheerleading for the war on terror and more war abroad and more police and more repression at home. Yes, they all want that. They all say that. They all vote the same way in Congress on these issues. Sorry, it's the truth. And, you know, believe what you want, but that unfortunately seems to be the case. We have 10 square blocks of public space to take back, and then we need to take back some public space, as was suggested by Jay Cabrera, City Council candidate, last night in the police department's community room at the downtown Neighbors, or actually Santa Cruz Neighbors, last City Council candidate forum, which is we need to have a plaza. We need to block off Pacific Avenue and restore some public space instead of it all being taken up by these mausoleums like the Rittenhouse mega structure that's going up across from O'Neill's and the Cinema 9. In any case, however, if you want to, go to the UN Association. Pat Arnold is the person to contact. She not only will take your $25 to $50 to honor Ruth Hunter on UN Association Day at 900 High Street at 5:30 to 8:30 tomorrow night, but, you know, Pat shows up for events that don't cost a thing and that cost her energy and time, and she showed up with the Raging Grannies to support the drum circle downtown and the right of the people to assemble peaceably in spite of a reactionary mayor's anti-homeless, anti-public assembly law, the parking lot panic law, that makes it illegal to be in a parking lot at all unless you're parking or retrieving a vehicle or walking through. So that's another thing that's happening. There's a 7 o'clock on tomorrow night, there's a Santa Cruz fundraiser for the Iraqi vets. Actually, it's, is it a fundraiser? Yes, fundraiser for Iraqi vets against the war, 7 to 11 in the Vets Hall at 846 Front Street in downtown Santa Cruz. That's a, these are going to get the reports of the vets who went to both the Democratic and the Republican convention demonstrations and demonstrated and got turned away and blockaded in both places. Of course, naturally, because both the Democrats and Republicans have no intention of ending the war or the overseas occupation until they get kicked out of those countries or until they get fragged out. There was one of the first 4 cases of fragging was on the AP wires today. Interesting case. It sounds like a kind of a weak case, but that's another story. Anyway, go down tomorrow night if you want to get more details on that. That's 7 o'clock. Something for almost everyone for a great cause. Exhibit of photos from Iraq by Jerome Ridgway. Spoken word, live dance music. Santa Cruz Iraqi Vets Against the War chapter members Kenny Sexton and Matt Childers will speak and show photos and videos of the joint military vet demonstrations and other actions at the Democratic and Republican national conventions, including police violence and illegal arrests and harassment, which, of course, never happens in Santa Cruz, right? They'll also discuss the IVAW, Iraqi Vets Against the War Conference, and the disturbing police presence there, and be available for question and answers. Spoken word by Sandino Gomez, who is a proud Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcaster, Childers and others, and a documentary photo exhibit by Operation Iraqi Freedom Vet. Jeremiah Ridgway's photos were featured in the September 10th issue of Good Times. And you're going to have the 70s retro band, the Reliquies. $10 suggested donation, but no one will be turned away for lack of funds. Money raised will go to the Santa Cruz chapter of IVAW, the Truth and Recruiting Network, and the Central Coast Santa Cruz GI Rights Hotline, and sponsored by the Iraqi Vets Against the War Santa Cruz chapter, Central Coast Santa Cruz GI Rights Hotline, Brown Berets, and TIRN, Truth and Recruiting Network. And you can read more about it and about other things on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz or Santa Cruz Indie Media. You are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm Robert Norris. Name of the show is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. If you'd like to, you can call in. 427-3772 is the phone number here. And let's turn now to an interview with a vet who is having some problems with our local police. And Tim Bratton, who is, I guess, I'm not sure if he's the executive director or the yoga meister in residence or whatever he is. He's he has some authority and power at the vet's hall, and he's provoked a lot of tempers from the vets. Here's Robert Hutchinson, also known as Hutch, giving a report at the HUF meeting, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which meets every Wednesday, and this is his report from yesterday. We meet every Wednesday morning, in case you want to check us out in the basement of the county building. Here you go.
I'm here at the HUF meeting on October 22nd, that day of national protest against police brutality, by the way, for those who don't know, down in the county building in the cafeteria, where the cooks seem to be dropping dishes and making lots of noise, and the coffee is just horrible. But that's another story, folks. Cafeteria, or also known as the American Cafe, is where HUF meets every Wednesday, 9:30 to 11:30, and I'm with Bereid Vet and a notorious Hutch guy, Robert Hutchinson. Hi, Hutch.
Good morning, America.
Now, you've all been a subject of some discussion because, or actually, you've given us a lot of information around the problems at the Veterans Hall, where Tim Bratton, the director there, has in the past discriminated against veterans by your analysis. And actually, you've gotten reports from other vets that, you know, the whole entire second floor is being turned over to yoga masters for profit instead of vet services, and the problems in the basement and the problems in the bathroom on the first floor. But recently, things have gotten better, and that you've been actually allowed to use the bathroom, but still contacted by Tim Bratton with some complaints.
Yes, I saw Tim yesterday, and he said, "Hey, you're not." I said, "Tim, the restraining order that you perjured yourself to get against me expired." However, she wants me to check. I said, "Well, you can check all you want."
Where did you talk to him?
Out in front. I just came out of the vet's hall, and he was just coming in.
What did he say? Did he talk to you, or did you talk to him first?
And got in my face again.
What did you say?
I said, look.
What did he say?
He said, "Hutch, you're not allowed in here." I said, "Tim, the restraining order has expired. You know that. Well, you want me to check?" I said, "I've already checked, Tim. Go ahead and check. Call the police." I said, "I'm done in here, but I'll be back."
At what point, which point, Tim said what?
He said, "Well, I'm calling the police anyhow."
Okay, what day was that?
That was yesterday morning.
That was October 21st, Tuesday. Any witnesses?
Larry Wilson, Commander Wilson of the Disabled American Veterans.
Did Larry step in and defend you, or did he stand back and say nothing?
He just stood back and said nothing. He just smiled.
I see. Were you satisfied with that response or not?
Yes. He knew nothing that you say to Tim is not going to be accepted by Tim. Tim's already made his mind up. He doesn't want us in there. However, we're in there, and we're there to stay.
It's really unclear to me why all these people who are endlessly grumbling and growling about the vets hall, calling for investigations by the attorney general, trying to amass evidence for a court lawsuit, even tabling in front of the vets hall with the support of HUF and the Human Rights Organization, trying to get some documentation of what's going on, don't actually just stand up and say, "Hold it, Tim, Tim as engaging in behavior that's inappropriate towards a vet, just don't do this, please. And then whip out a tape recorder and a camera and start videoing and audioing the whole thing. It doesn't take a lot of energy. I've done it on numerous occasions in other venues. I don't understand why it's not being done there. And I also don't understand why information that is reliable and firsthand, because you're getting second and third-hand information from me, isn't being presented to the community. Free Radio Santa Cruz is a resource. We're available for any vet to come in and, you know, present a tape of an example of discrimination by Tim Bratton directly. And yet it's been 3 years, and there are no such tapes that have come to us. I'm not saying that these reports are false. I don't think they are. I think they're true. But how can we effectively proceed without accurate documentation? I mean, this is the very reason when I walk into the police station with a tape recorder, the police refuse to serve me because they don't want that kind of evidence around that indicates they're behaving rudely or inappropriately or not giving me the service that they're supposed to give, so they just don't give me any service. It's a way they have of stonewalling that, of course, is ultimately, if I have the resources and I have the community support, that will redound against them both in court and in the court of public opinion. However, it shows you that there's power in documentation, and that's what I encourage vets and Robert Hutchinson and Bob Patton of the Human Rights Organization and Larry Wilson of whatever vet organization he's involved with to actually step up and do.
So, you also brought a ticket with you.
Oh, Tim Brad, by the way, I haven't gone to DA yet, but he's holding my mail, a piece of mail of my mother's funeral. He won't give it to me. But anyway, I have a ticket here that
How
I got.
How do you know he's holding your mail?
Because he said he got the mail, and he put it in one of the offices, and it wasn't in any of the other offices. So I told him yesterday, he says, well, you're not allowed to get mail here. I said, well, it didn't. I said, it came here, I didn't know that, now I know it, and you did something with it, and I won it.
What did he say, he was still holding it, or did he say he wasn't?
He said, I put it in some other office. I said, I checked every office, and it's not in any of the other offices, Tim.
So you think he may have mislaid it, if not be holding it now?
I think he's sitting on it.
Why would he want your mail from your mother?
It's my mother's funeral wake.
Well, why would he care about that?
Because he knows it hurts me.
Do you think he gives a shit about your feelings one way or the other?
Well, he wants to hurt me. He wants to upset me and antagonize me and make me go off and hurt him, so I'll go to jail, but I won't do that.
Well, now, you recently, of course, did go to jail for, what, 3 weeks?
20 days, yes. I was waiting to go to the VA hospital for treatment outside the building, and Tim called the police, and the police came, and one guy said I talked him into arresting me, another guy says, no, I didn't, a witness. However, they did take me to jail for 20 days. And
you were charged with?
Violating a court order, a restraining order, and resisting arrest and battering an officer. Now, I was in jail, and the public pretender, Angela Fitzsimmons, said, look, if you want to go to trial, you're going to...
We talked about this. Okay. She gave you this bogus advice that dump the case in order to have a better civil lawsuit later, which is ridiculous.
And
you plead to the case. Yeah, well, that it will get you free, but it will get you free with a record and with no chance of any civil recovery.
They would drop the charges, but they ain't going to drop the charges. It's on my record. And anyhow, so I lied.
So Tim Bratton... So you what?
I lied and pled guilty in court, and they let me go instead of going to trial.
Have you gone back and asked that the plea be rescinded?
Not yet, no.
Okay, we better act sooner. It's not going to be able to be.
Okay.
Not that it could be done anyway, but I don't know what the story is. Anyway, but so apparently Bratton felt the restraining order was in force at the beginning of September when this happened, right?
Yes.
When do you feel the order expired?
It said on the restraining order October the 12th of this year.
So it was in force when you were taken to jail?
Yes.
Now, where were you taken, you know, to jail because you were in the vet's hall or you were across the street?
I was outside in the parking lot waiting on the VA bus to go to the VA hospital for medical treatment.
And so Tim said you couldn't wait there. And where did he suggest you wait to go for medical treatment?
He didn't. He said I'm not allowed within 1,000 yards of the building. And it says on the restraining order 100 feet away from Tim Bratton or his place of work or his housing. It doesn't say 1,000 yards.
What did the police, say that they were going to let you go, but then you wanted to make it a test case or what? How did the police feel about the restraining order?
Apparently what my understanding is, and I believe it, the police just wanted to write me a ticket, but I insisted if they're going to write me a ticket, I'm not going to sign it. I want to go to jail now, and I want to take this trial because I'm just waiting on a hospital treatment bus. So they took me to jail.
Wouldn't you rather get a ticket and take the hospital bus if you wanted to really seriously take the bus.
I should have done that. It was a bad judgment on my part.
I got you. Also, by the way, if it was during the day and during a weekday, you could be taken immediately to court and asked to be taken to a magistrate to make sure there's probable cause. Although if there's a restraining order out, that's probably probable cause. If you're within 100 feet of Bratton, you're supposed to leave when he shows up,
he
right?
He came out around from his office. I was 100 feet away from him, and he came out next to me, and then, you know, then the police showed up.
I got you. Now, but you say that order has expired on the 12th of October?
Yes, yes.
Columbus Native American Slaughter Day.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty exciting. Jim Costner, take note. But the question is, though, what's the story now? How many times has Bratton approached you since October 12th? Today is October 22nd, 10 days later, claiming that you have been violating the restraining order that has allegedly expired?
He does it every time I go in the building or I'm leaving the building, every time.
How many times does that happen?
That happens about every day.
And have the police ever been called?
Well, he said he called them, but I waited a distance from there, and they never showed up. I guess they didn't want to waste their time.
You should wait in the building reading a flyer.
Well, they won't come in the building and get me. It's illegal, but they'll get me outside.
Well, you mean wait in the building where it's comfortable, or sit outside on the sidewalk or something, to see if it happens. I don't know if it's worth your time. It sounds like a bunch of horseshit and a bunch of threats. So you say you have a ticket here.
Yes, I do. This ticket was issued to me on... Yeah. The day after we met last week on a Thursday, I was in Trader Joe's, as I often go in there to shop, and this strange girl that I never saw working in there, she said, "You're not allowed in here." I said, "Well, I don't know why, but that's fine, I'll go." So I was outside of the store, and I was accosted by four security guys. They physically coerced me back inside a gated area, and they told me, and one guy handcuffed me. He drew blood.
Your right hand, there's a kind of a sore and a scab on your right hand, a small one.
Recent one. And anyhow, so...
Grape or a cut.
That, and they said, "Sit down." I said, "No," and they forced me down and banged my head, and I said, "Call the police now. I want to talk to my attorney. Call an officer." So they called an officer, and this officer I never saw said, "Well, I told you you weren't allowed in here." I said, "I never saw you before." I said, "Please give me a ticket, and you can lie to the judge." They said, "We said he can't be in here." I said, "You never told me that," and they showed me a photo of a... They have a photo of people they caught shoplifting in there, and there was a picture that it looked vaguely similar to me, but it wasn't me. I said, "Well, that's not me." "Well, we took this 3 years ago, and you're not allowed in here." I said, "I come in here about every other day, and now all of a sudden I'm allowed." I said, "I wasn't in the store." So then the officer says, "Well, okay." He said, turn him loose, take the handcuffs off." Said, "You come back here again, you'll go to jail, and you can't shop at Long's or New Leaf's." I said, "Well, fine." So then I went to
New Leaf? Why not New Leaf?
I don't know. They wouldn't give me an answer. So, yeah.
The cop, is a signature on here?
Yeah, I can't read it.
It's Officer Winston. My goodness.
He's a liar. He is a liar. Anyhow.
He's a short police officer.
Yeah, short black hair about my size. And I never saw him. Anyhow, so I immediately went to doctors on duty, and they wouldn't treat me. So I called 911, and the ambulance took me to the emergency room at Dominican. And the doctor said, "You have head trauma. Got a mark there." And he said, "X-rays on my wrist. You have a fractured wrist." He said, "I'll put that on my record." That was last Thursday.
You have a copy of this?
I will get the doctor's report. I didn't wait around when he did it. I've got a band. I've got the hospital band somewhere, but it tells the name of the doctor and everything. But I think that's in the restroom. But I can get the records, his name and the results of the X-ray.
Get the records.
Week.
Yeah, or just make sure you give them to someone who is... Are you living indoors or outdoors?
I'm outdoors right now.
Give them to somebody where a safe place to store them, wherever that is.
Good place. Larry Wilson. Yeah.
You are charged, according to this citation from Officer Winston, dated 10-16, 4:22 in the afternoon. Your address is Coral Street, 9.60.0. It looks like 10 municipal code, remaining on business property after being told to leave.
I was outside. I was outside the business. I left immediately. And they grabbed me and drug me around back and then hassled me and brutalized me. I wasn't inside the store. I left immediately.
Were you on the business property outside? Like, were you on the sidewalk or were you in the parking lot?
I was in the parking lot on my way across the parking lot. So I guess I was legally.
Were you standing or were you walking?
Walking away. And they surrounded me, grabbed me, and said, come with us. So I didn't have much.
Sounds like a false arrest of the kind that might get you some money.
Yeah.
I would feel.
And they damaged me psychologically and physically, and I have records. I'll bring the records forthwith of the next meeting because I'm tired of this. This isn't the first time. And Officer Winston, I never saw him before. He is a bold-faced liar. He never told me. I told you never to come in here before. Not true.
Did he say when he told you this?
No, he didn't.
Okay, well, the other thing you want to do is you want to get the so-called incident recall of this incident, which is the dispatcher tape.
Okay.
Both a transcript of and the original tape. And what you need to do is go to the, make a specific Public Records Act request, write down, Robert Hutchinson, want a copy of the incident of police act, the so-called incident recall tape and transcript, and you present it to the police department, go over there, present them, get a stamped copy indicating that you've actually requested it, so you have documentation that you've done that.
Okay.
Refer to the time of the incident, the place of the incident, the officer involved.
Like three other private security people.
Names of any of them do you know?
No, I don't, but I don't know. They didn't
descriptions
have
of what they look like?
One guy was a brother of color, about 6'1". The officer was looked like Hispanic, about 5'10", about 165, brown eyes, black hair.
The police officer?
That was a police officer. The other security guy had a brown uniform. He was about 6 foot. He had sandy-colored hair, and he had a badge, a golden badge, security. I think it was First Alarm. He said he was a veteran, and he said, yeah, I see you're a veteran. What was your MO? I said, none of your business. And the other one, he was a white guy, or a Mexican guy, got a handcuff. He was a little Mexican guy, and he was mean. He drew blood, and he broke my wrist and slammed me down and banged my head. But he said, sit down. I said, no. He said, boom, bam.
How long did it take the ambulance to arrive?
I called the courthouse. It took them about five minutes.
Pretty fast work.
Fast work. And they were very good. Dominican did excellent in their treatment.
Name of your doctor?
Let me go to the restroom. I have his name on the little bracelet. The hospital.
I'm sorry, we can't allow you to go to the restroom. You're going to have to leave the building.
Call the police, please.
I'll be doing that.
Don't call Sir Winston. He don't like me.
You can call Nan or the old deadpan, but don't call Winston.
And that was a report from Robert Hutchinson yesterday at the Huff meeting of a citation for being in Trader Joe's. Hutch denies that he was ever told to leave Trader Joe's, and could well be a case of mistaken identity, or perhaps Hutch is not telling us the truth. You've got to be the judge of that. I don't know. Hutch would be putting a lot of energy into telling a false tale, but who knows? I've seen enough harassment around Santa Cruz to believe it could well be the truth, and therefore it's certainly worth hearing this man's side of the story. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. My name is Robert Norse. You're listening to Freak Radio, and you can be talking to Freak Radio, too, if you want. 427-3772 is the call-in number, and I am watching the phone line with an eagle eye in case anyone has any comments on this. I was going to give a call to Rebecca, the woman who was on last Thursday. She was the woman who, we believe it's Officer Winston again. Officer Winston's name seems to be cropping up a lot. Winston is the man that Billy, also known as Corey, claimed he was kicked in the face by on the levee about a month and a half ago. Winston is after a campaign of harassment against him. This is according to this young guy who was in the studio, and you can actually hear the transcripts of his allegations by going to back audio files of this show, which you can find on the Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom website. And that can be found at www.huffsantacruz.org, www.huffsantacruz.org. And the name of the show, Bathrobe, Spears, Broadsides, go back and look at the show descriptions, and look for Officer Winston. You'll find some concerns by not just one, two, but a number of people regarding his behavior downtown. Let's see here. A couple of other things are happening. There is an event happening in San Francisco, October 25th and 26th, which I guess is in 2 or 3 days, actually. The Saturday and Sunday, probably. Come join the Nader team at this event. And this has to do with the legalization of hemp. Ralph Nader supports the legalization of marijuana, pardoning for all nonviolent drug offenders, and has been working D.C. towards industrial hemp legalization for over 10 years. Lineup: Dead Presidents, Dead Prez, Region of Darkness, featuring Steve Adams, Josh Clark, Tea Leaf Green, Adam Iskov, Stephen Perkins, Steve Mullins, a bunch of folks. This is a Wonders of the Cannabis House Band, a whole bunch of people. Ed Rosenthal will be speaking. Roll It, Weave It, Smoke It, Eat It. The benefits of cannabis and hemp are featured in this 2-day concert, expo, and festival. Pot, weed, bud, hemp, ganja, and grass, whatever you choose to call it. The cannabis... I have a little trouble reading the screen. Sorry, folks. The cannabis plant has permeated the fabric of American culture and counterculture, with the San Francisco Bay Area a hotbed for continued activism and debate. The Wonders of Cannabis Festival returns for the, looks like the third year, for the fourth year, to the Hall of Flowers and the Botanical Gardens in Golden Gate Park. The event showcases live music, comedy, speakers, forums, and vendors. The enlightening 2 days are meant to educate and celebrate the versatile plant and the dynamic culture that has surrounded it for over 5,000 years. And we'll touch on important topics such as user rights, the many uses and advances in research. The festival will feature a celebration of craftsmanship and artistry alive within the culture. Each day you get a chance to compete in the popular rolling contests with prizes for the fastest, longest, fattest, and best one-handed joints. Cannabis is a helpful herb used by millions of people, says Ed Rosenthal, activist and founder of the event. We want to educate the public about the truth gained through legitimate research. In order to playfully yet pointedly draw attention to the magical qualities of the herb, Ed will appear at the event in a costume with cannabis elements to add flair. Wonders of Cannabis is a fundraiser in support of Green Aid, a medical marijuana legal defense and education fund based in Oakland, California, as well as New York Normal, New York State CAN, C-A-N, and other pro-freedom activism. Founder Ed Rosenthal is recognized worldwide as an authority on marijuana. In his 30-plus years as a cannabis expert, he has served as a columnist for High Times, Cannabis Culture, and Skunk magazines. He has written or edited more than a dozen books about marijuana cultivation and social policy. Tickets are $50 for a 2-day pass, $30 for 1 p.m. to 11:30 Saturday, $35 for 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Sunday. So this is not for the poor. Weekend pass is $55 at the door. You get a wristband for reentry. If you're interested, give a call to Mark, 631-848-7575. 631-848-7575. There's a cannabis event happening this weekend up in San Francisco. It's Mark Kandaris, Get Out the Vote staff, Ralph Nader, 2008. Mark M. Kandaris at votenader.org. So it serves a number of purposes. Boy, I should go up there and see if I can win that joint rolling contest. I haven't been too much of a joint roller in the last few years, but I used to roll a joint with the best of them. Here's an article, 20 million pot arrests and counting, from the October 8th issue of the Anderson Valley Advertiser. This November, moments before millions of voters flocked to the polls to elect America's 44th president, law enforcement officials will make their 20 millionth marijuana arrest. Yet, in the days leading up to this appalling milestone, it's unlikely either candidate will call for or even so much as entertain any change in U.S. pot policies. It's even less likely the mainstream media will care. Since the early 90s, the total number of Americans busted annually for pot has nearly tripled. A little interjection here. If anyone is interested in getting the stats on marijuana arrests and putting them online over the last 20 years in Santa Cruz, I would be very much interested. Give a call to Huff at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's my off-air number. If you want to work on a local project to find out just how liberal Santa Cruz has been around marijuana arrests. Perhaps they've been liberal. It's not been my impression that that's been the case. Police department lies notwithstanding on that issue. In 1991, police arrested a modern low of 288,000 people for minor marijuana violations in the United States, and that's still a hell of a lot of people, according to the FBI's annual Uniform Crime Report. By 2006, the last year for which data is available, a record 830,000, again compared with 288,000 back in 1991, were arrested. Of those arrested, an estimated 90% are charged with minor possession, not trafficking, cultivation, or sales. That's one American arrested for pot every 38 seconds. Yet despite this massive increase in arrests, by contrast, federal statistics indicate that adult marijuana use has remained fairly stable over the past decade. The mass media and Congress continue to ignore the story. By doing so, they ignore the plight of millions of Americans who suffer significant sanctions and hardships because of pot-related run-ins with law enforcement. These penalties include probation and mandatory drug testing, loss of employment, loss of child custody, removal from subsidized housing, asset forfeiture, loss of student aid, loss of voting privileges, loss of adoption rights, loss of gun possession rights, and loss of certain federal welfare benefits, such as food stamps. Some Americans serve time for pot. Nearly 13% of state inmates and 12.4% of federal inmates are incarcerated for marijuana-related drug violations, according to the 2006 Bureau of Justice Statistics report. The report did not include the estimated percentage of inmates incarcerated in county jails for pot-related offenses. That's like our jail in Santa Cruz. In human terms, this means that some 34,000 state inmates and an estimated 11,000 federal inmates are serving time behind bars for violating marijuana laws. In fiscal terms, this means U.S. taxpayers are spending more than $1 billion annually to imprison pot offenders. The front-end criminal justice costs, such as the number of hours a police officer must put in to arrest and process the average pot offender, is far greater. Some researchers, such as Harvard University economist Jeffrey Miron, estimated at upwards of $7 billion a year. But the financial and social costs only tell a part of the story. Up to 70% of all individuals in drug treatment for pot are placed there by the criminal justice system, according to statistics published by the U.S. Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration. In other words, these individuals were ordered by a judge or a drug court to attend rehab in lieu of jail or as a requirement of their probation. Of those enrolled in treatment, federal statistics indicate that more than one in three had not even used marijuana in the 30 days prior to their admission. Yet disingenuously, the White House argues that these rising admission rates justify the need to continue arresting cannabis users, even though the policy, not the drug, is fueling the surge in drug treatment. At the same time, thousands of Americans seeking and needing drug treatment are denied because facilities lack bed space. Equally troubling, yet seldom discussed publicly, is the reality that marijuana enforcement disproportionately affects citizens by age. According to data compiled by the FBI, 74% of all Americans busted for pot are under 30. One out of four is 18 or younger. So there you have that wonderful youth culture that Mayor Coonerty claims to be supporting. And, of course, he is. By supporting the police, he's continuing to support these kinds of busts. He voted against Measure K going on the ballot. He has voted in favor of crippling Measure K. That's our local measure. that would require the police to make marijuana enforcement of adults, marijuana use and transportation, all kinds, anything involving marijuana in private, the lowest priority, the lowest enforcement priority. So when Coonerty babbles about youth culture, and when the Good Times and the Metro puff him up by talking about how he's an au courant kind of guy who's, you know, appealing to young people because he himself happens to be younger, think about his real policies, not the PR and the fluff that surrounds it. We now have a generation, the writer of this article, Paul Armentano, deputy director of Normal and the Normal Foundation in Washington, D.C., writes, "We now have a generation or two that is so alienated that many young people believe the police are an instrument of their oppression rather than their protection." Well, realistic rather than alienated, I would say. "While young people suffer the most under current anti-pot laws, they lack the financial means and political capital to influence politicians to challenge them. They also lack the money to adequately fund the drug law reform movement at a level necessary to represent and protect their interests. As a result, marijuana arrests continue to climb unabated, and few in the mainstream press and even fewer lawmakers feel any sufficient political pressure to address it." And that's the article, 20 Million Pot Arrests and Counting, by Paul Armentano in the Anderson Valley Advertiser of October 8th. It's really sad. I'm trying to get the Measure K Commission involved in dealing with the kind of harassment people like City Council candidate Craig Canada is continuing to suffer. He still faces court proceedings for medicating with medical marijuana in public, although discreetly in public, sort of behind a bush near the McPherson Natural History Museum, off in one of those little corridors. It's actually it's in public, but it's on private property, so it really is Measure K applicable. If you're on private property and you're using marijuana, even if you're using it recreationally, and he was using it medicinally, you have the right to do so. At least you have the right not to be hassled. It's supposed to be the lowest enforcement priority. Yet police showed up very, very quickly to arrest him. I actually have an interview with Craig about his campaign. I've been a little unsettled and cranky with Craig because he gets on my nerves at times, but he is a very articulate spokesperson and a very passionate and moving chronicler of his own experiences in Santa Cruz as a homeless person who's been denied lodging and services because he medically uses marijuana. And as a person who fights, been fighting this fight that a lot of us have been fighting for the legalization of an herb that many find of great benefit in all kinds of medical conditions, but most important is a tool that the police and conservative authorities use to incarcerate people, control people, intimidate people, humiliate people, divest them of their liberty and their property and their self-respect. And no city council candidates, the possible exception of Craig Canada, have spoken about that issue with any local specificity. And even he talks more about his own personal experiences than about particular reforms and problems others have, which is one of the problems I have with Craig Canada, is he's very much focused on his own personal situation, which is a real one and an important one. But if you're running for city council, you've got to talk about the broader issue. And he also does talk about that somewhat. And I'm glad when he does, because I think it's important that he do that. You're tuned to Free Radio. It's 101.1 FM you're looking at, in case you haven't noticed. You also may be hearing us on computer, streaming on the Internet at freakradio.org, or perhaps you're listening to an archive at www.huffsantacruz.org. In any case, I'm glad you're listening. I hope that if you're listening to the live broadcast, feel free to call in with your own thoughts on these issues, your own experiences, and perhaps more important, what you think we need to do in this community to make the changes necessary that Obama and Representative Farr and Mayor Coonerty or Fitzmaurice or Byers or whoever wins in this election are not going to make, for sure. It's got to be us making the changes. And it's hard because people like Anita Henry or on the Measure K committee can't be reached. You send them emails and you get silence. And the committee itself has been cut back to 2 meetings a year. So what we really need to do is have the kind of mass protests, smokeouts, and demonstrations that are being organized, as I spoke about in, as I was reading you about, in San Francisco, the benefit that Ed Rosenthal is speaking at. I'm not talking about little kind of once a year, oh, please let us do our dying medical marijuana patient thing in, you know, San Lorenzo Park that WHAM does, which certainly they should be allowed to do. They should be allowed to do it every weekend if they need to. Every day a person has a right to medicate, for God's sake. But people get so intimidated and corrupted and co-opted, and I'm talking about Valerie Corral here, Valerie and Mike Corral, that they aren't advocating for the right of people to medicate where they need to medicate in Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz should be declared not a drug-free zone, but a drug prohibition-free zone, at least as far as marijuana goes, for sure. And I think, of course, I've argued for the legalization of all drugs and the medicalization of this issue. That's the only way we're ever going to get a handle on it, is my belief. And instead, you have this rollover and play waggy dog with the police that all the candidates are doing, talking about the need for stronger police and more policing. To give you an example of this, I'm going to play you a little bit from the forum from last night. This is the forum that Uncle Dennis called in earlier to complain that he couldn't hear very well, or he thought it was inaudible. I actually could hear it when I listened to it from Felton on the Internet, but perhaps it was not audible on the radio. I don't know. This is a different recording. I'm not going to play a lot of it because, frankly, I don't think these council candidates are worth a lot of time and attention. But the issues certainly are. We have to run with the issues somehow. We have to find some way to unite around these issues. And here's the man who is currently mayor of Santa Cruz from the powerful Coonerty family downtown. His father is supervisor, very powerful figure in county government. His family runs the Bookshop Santa Cruz, powerful business in Santa Cruz. Coonerty was defeated through citizen action for when he attempted to run as an Obama delegate, because a lot of people pointed out that the principles that some people think Obama might espouse, though he's never really actually come out for the Brown Act or transparency in government locally or rights, civil rights for homeless people, I've never heard Barack Obama say a word about any of these things. I keep waiting for Mediana Bramana, who's the Obama supporter, who's been on our show before, to come back with some information. I never get it. But nonetheless, Coonerty was defeated. And I think in significant part because a lot of us, well, a number of us from Huff went up to the Obama delegate selection process and publicized just exactly what Mayor Coonerty's positions and record were in Santa Cruz over the last 4 years, how he has been a major supporter of police repression. I mean, it's cops for Coonerty, folks. That's the deal. You know, you'll hear him bragging about how he's got the police force up to its maximum size now, and he wants more cops, and this is the way to put people in line. I mean, you know, it's interesting. If you talk to Ryan Coonerty and you talk to his students, he seems a fairly easygoing kind of guy. He's got a nice smile. He's coming very kind of comfortable in how he runs city council meetings. You know, he'll smile at Michael Tomasi, the grizzled vet who kind of comes up and makes his little comic, I'm the king of marijuana speeches, which aren't really that comic. He has real things to say, but he's dismissed as a clown. He's kind of paraded around as an example of tolerance, and the reason we need repressive rules are because we got wingnuts like this. But Coonerty is, you know, he has this kind of mellow, he's got a mellower manner as he kind of gets more comfortable with power, which frankly makes me real nervous. Because, let's play a little of what he had to say at this forum last night. Again, this is the Santa Cruz Neighbors were doing a house that was completely full. Almost all seats were taken. I got there a bit late, and I'm kind of going into the midst of the situation. There were nine. First, there were eight, and then there were nine when Craig Canada joined the forum. Candidates sitting before a row, a bunch of people seated, and they were asked questions where they were allowed, I think, 1 minute to respond, rapid-fire response, which doesn't give people much opportunity, but does require them to get to the point. It kind of has both its virtues and its drawbacks. Here's what Coonerty had to say.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Ryan Coonerty. I grew up here, and so I've known a lot of you for most of my life, maybe before I was born. My proud achievement is I came back to Santa Cruz after being back east, and I came back because I wanted to serve the community that had provided me a fantastic place to grow up, that had protected the coast and the oceans and Lighthouse Field, that rebuilt downtown, that had made Santa Cruz a wonderful place to grow up. And I think in 4 years, and maybe we'll talk about this a little more, we've been able to make some serious improvements. When I got elected, we were 14 police officers down, and now we're at full capacity in the police department. It's not enough, but it's a big start. Our roads had potholes everywhere, and now we have paving going on, and we'll have paving going on for the next couple years. We're losing young families who couldn't afford to stay here, and we've created good jobs. We had lawsuits going to the university that was costing U.S. taxpayer money because we were paying for both sides. We've negotiated a settlement that I think will be good for the community, good for the university, and good for our neighborhoods. And so it's been an honor to serve, and that's my proudest achievement. Thank you.
And the question was, what's your proudest achievement? A couple of points. Coonerty is often accused of being really in bed with a lot of developers, Swenson, Au, Canfield, and that it isn't been because of his work that there's been any kind of preservation activities in Santa Cruz. He, of course, was an opponent of raising the minimum wage in Santa Cruz, which the merchant community was able to defeat. I don't know about the pothole situation. It's hard to say whether the roads have gotten too much better. Perhaps they have. If you look at his achievements, the one thing I remember, he talks about his university achievement, the deal with the university, where apparently they're going to expand by 4,000 students, kick down some money to the community, but they're not really going to meet their housing promises of 20 years ago, where they were supposed to do, I'm not quite sure what percentages, but it was significantly higher than they've met for the housing, both for students and faculty on campus. So they're not being held to that. It sounds like it could be a way of avoiding legal costs. That's one of the things that City Attorney John Barisoni, he actually doesn't really hold back his legal costs. He makes a lot of money, but it's an excuse used by the city council to do things like sell out tenants, as at the Clearview Court Trailer Park Mobile Home Park, or the De Anza Mobile Home Park, where the rent control was jettisoned by Matthews and by Rotkin and by Kennedy. And I don't know if Coonerty was on the council when that happened, but I certainly haven't heard Coonerty coming in support of renters in any way. Homeowners who, there was a question about the unruly partying law that passed all the city council candidates, which I may play for you, but you don't hear much. I've seen no renter protection measures from Coonerty or from any of the council members. I mean, Tony Madrigal, that great man of the people, has not proposed a single renter protection proposal. Rotkin, who claimed he was a big rent control advocate, said, oh, we can't do it because it failed in 1982. It's a pathetic situation how regressive, how some issues are not even talked about anymore. I mean, even the candidates who are, I don't know, leftists or the progressives or radicals, Craig Canada, Simba Kenyatta, Jay Cabrera, don't talk about rent control or renter protection. At least I haven't heard them at that part of the forums I've been to. I'll give you an idea of some of the other, how the other candidates responded. It's not terribly exciting, but let's hear a little bit more of it. This is Don Lane, who was a former mayor of Santa Cruz back in the early 90s. We had thought at one time he was a potential supporter for ending the sleeping ban, but that was only when we had massive numbers of homeless people going to city council, getting arrested every night peacefully, but, you know, because they slept outside. And they got ticketed and arrested by Mayor, then Mayor Wormhout, and then council member Laird, John Laird. That's that wonderful assemblyman, John Laird, who's such a great guy on gay rights. But, you know, don't try to be a poor gay person outside, or, you know, Laird will have you arrested. At least he did when he was mayor, and never apologized for any of those behaviors.
Hi, I'm Simba Kenyatta. And
so it's not Don Lane, sorry, it is Simba Kenyatta. Simba is a guy who we've interviewed in the studio. He's a community leader who's most recently been involved with the Coalition for a Community-Wide Dialogue on Racism, Poverty, and various other injustice and so forth. And frankly, I was impressed with the spirit that was shown at this meeting. I was there this last weekend on Saturday. I played a bit of an interview with Tony Madrigal on my Sunday show about it. I have more tape on it, and I'll probably be playing more on Sunday. And I believe that Danielson, free radio broadcaster, has posted some audio on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz about this community-wide coalition. My concern is that something come out of it. And I'm trying to be helpful in that regard. I mean, it seems to me if people want documented police misconduct, I mean, I have 20 years of tapes, five of them online. You can hear them. You can get the documentation. There's a clear need for ending the selective enforcement policies that are mandated or allowed by the Santa Cruz City Council and mayor after mayor, and more important, our city manager for life, Dick Wilson, and our police chief, Howard Scarry. Here is Simba Kenyatta, whose Beyond Politics campaign usually does not extend beyond November 4th. Now, I think this year it may well extend beyond November 4th because he is involved with Tony Madrigal in this coalition, which hopefully will actually proceed to at least act like it's doing something, and perhaps it will. I'm going to be, try to be, as I said, I attended, I try to be helpful, I try to provide whatever documentation I have. I think it's relatively straightforward what you do. You start a lawsuit, you do some mass protests, you lobby for an initiative that requires that there be a really meaningful oversight or an ombudsperson or new laws setting in place certain police policies. And it doesn't take rocket science or 6 or 8 or 10 months to go a lot very further with it, unless you're using it as some kind of a device simply for drumming up political support. That's my concern, and I continue to express it. But Simba's welcome to come on the radio and talk about it. I think I'm not aware he has any answers, but if he does, that's great. And even if he doesn't, and the community can work out some answers that neither of us have thought about, that's great too. Anyway, here he is talking at this forum last night.
My achievement is I raised a sweet, intelligent, curious, loving young man. He's 26 years old now, so I did well. He's not in prison and he doesn't have any babies, so I'm very happy. You don't know how happy I am. And my other prompt achievement, I just got to talking to somebody about today, is that when I had the youth outreach program here at Loud Muslim Center, I also did a lot of anti-gang warfare work, and I have literally put myself between warring young men with weapons that want to do each other harm.
And a little tired of hearing about this particular incident from Simba, and I realize I'm cutting him off, and some people are going to say, don't you cut him off in the middle of his speech. Well, I apologize, Simba. I apologize to listeners. I would love to have Simba bring a couple of gang members in to publicly talk about these issues and talk about what their grievances are, what their concerns are, what their wants are. I have never in Santa Cruz history ever seen that happen, either on community TV or, for that matter, on free radio. Maybe I just haven't been listening to the right shows. Maybe someone can call in and advise me. Maybe somebody can show me an old tape where this has happened. There's a lot of blather about the gang violence problem, and there's gang violence, sure. You know, there's a lot of violence going on in Iraq at the present time. There's a lot of, murder going on in Pakistan and Afghanistan with our money. There are cops killing people in different cities in the country. There are husbands killing wives and vice versa. There are a lot of problems, for sure. But using the fear card, you know, the paranoia card, the terror card, the Coonerty card, as I call it, and I say this because Coonerty uses it most frequently and most persistently, not really that passionately, but just, it's kind of almost cynically used, I think, by him. I don't like it. And people who talk about gang problems, when they don't get very specific about the solutions, oh, let's sit down and talk. Sure, but, you know, like in what way, in what forum, using who are the gang leaders you're going to talk to, and what are the kind of proposals and resources you're going to bring to bear. I mean, I want to hear about this, and we need to hear about this even when Sima goes down to defeat in, you know, 2 weeks, as he almost surely will. Although, who knows? I may be voting for him myself, you know? And you should make up your own mind. But the fact of the matter is, this is not an election day speech. It's a real problem. And if it's a real problem, then it has to be addressed beyond election, beyond politics, as Simba's slogan has it.
Managed to get them to sit down and talk to each other, even though a lot of them couldn't even speak English, but people from Barrios Unidos helped translate. And in about half an hour, everybody walked out of there shaking hands and laughing. That's my proudest achievement, and it is because a few years ago, a young man was walking down Pacific Garden Mall, and he was so drunk he could hardly stand up. And his English wasn't very good. But he got it through to me. He said, "You saved lives." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "You know, a long time ago, you had that program." I said, "Yeah." He said, "You saved lives that night." He said, "Because we're going to kill each other. And you managed to get us to sit down and talk to each other, and nobody died." So that's my biggest achievement.
And, you know, I've had people come up to me on the Pacific Garden Mall more than once and commend me on what a wonderful job I'm doing. And I kind of look at that person and I say, "Doing what?" You know, I babble on the radio twice a week and I take reports from the street. I'm not aware the situation has gotten substantially better because of what I'm doing. There have been no new institutions really put in place. Well, that's really debatable. Huff has done some things that we should be given credit for. We probably should spend a whole show talking about the achievements of Huff, ranging from free meal programs to the Homeless Service Center, Homeless Community Resource Center. We've stopped, I think, a number of bad things. I think the presence of countervailing... Anyway, I'm kind of contradicting myself. But generally, you know, things are, I think, generally getting worse, not getting better in the sense of meaningful community control of police and so forth. You may say we put a break on some of that, but, you know, do I have a proud achievement there? I wouldn't say I have a proud achievement unless there was something, you know, that actually got done. And I'm glad that if Simba saved some lives, that's great. You know, but the question though is, you know, what's in place now? And more important, what vision do we have now to proceed? It can help with these kinds of problems. You know, blaming gangs is kind of like blaming Jews, you know, or blaming, you know, immigrants. I mean, gangs are, you know, obviously in a somewhat different category, but it's still a useful scapegoat. I mean, it's like I said in an earlier show when this kind of a less audible version of this tape was played and Coonerty said something about, you know, or maybe it was Fitzmaurice talking about how there's a need for, you know, better policing and more, you know, more control and less aggressive behavior downtown, and we got to have better enforcement. And my response was, the reason you got the aggression downtown is because a whole series of repressive laws and grim economic conditions and wretched job lack of opportunities and crappy housing situations put people in a particularly nasty mood, and then you have some people who are afraid of each other and trained to call the police and use these minor laws to entangle people and run them off and humiliate them. And no wonder people get aggressive, because, by God, the human spirit wants to be given a certain amount of dignity, a certain amount of respect. And if people get treated like shit, yes, they do. So, well, they may truckle under. They may say, "Yes, yes, oh, yes, maza, yes." But they may also say, "Fuck you." And that can happen, too. And you have to ask yourself which is better. The second may not sound so good. When they say, You won't give me a dollar, you motherfucker. That's, you know, that's aggressive panhandling. You know, it's not something you want to hear. I don't like it when I hear it. It sounds threatening to me. But it's also a kind of a natural reaction when you see people spending all kinds of money in expensive knickknacks and cappuccinos and ignoring people who have real needs who are on the streets. It's really grotesque. And it's going to be seen more and more frequently, I think, as the foreclosures increase, as the stock market plummets, as it has in the last 2 days, you know, and as you hear the same bullshit from the same recycled city council members who will be taking over the same seats. Here's a woman who sings a song I like, and I play this song at least 10 times on my show over the years. I've been doing this show since 1995. It's Peggy Seeger. She's at her 70th birthday recording celebration, and here she is singing this song. Let's take a break and listen to her.
When I was a little girl, I wished I was a boy. I tagged along behind a gang of warm corduroys. Everybody said I only did it to... But I got a frog in my throat. Remember that joke when Diana was marrying Charles? Where they said, don't do it, Diana, he'll turn back into a frog. And that's not fair to Charles. But it's a good joke anyway. When I was a little girl, I wished I was a boy. I tagged along behind a gang of warmy corduroys. Everybody said I only did it to annoy, but I was gonna be an engineer. Mama told me, can't you be a lady? Your duty is to make me the mother of a pearl. Wait until you're older, dear, and maybe you'll be glad that you're a girl. A dainty as a Dresden statue, gentle as a Jersey cow. Smooth as silk is creamy milk. Learn to coo, learn to moo. That's what you do to be a lady now. Well, when I went to school, I learned to write and how to read. History, geography, and home economy. And typing is a skill that every girl is sure to need. To while away the extra time until the time to breed. Then they have the nerve to say, what would you like to be? I says, I'm gonna be an engineer. No, you only need to learn to be a lady. The duty isn't yours for to try and run the world. An engineer could never have a baby. Remember, dear, that you're a girl. But she's smart for a woman. I wonder how she got that way. You get no choice, you get no voice. Just stay mom, pretend you're dumb. And that's how you come to be a lady today. Then Jimmy come along and we set up a conjugation. We were busy every night with love and recreation. I spent the day at work so he could get his education. Well, now he's an engineer. He says, I know you'll always be a lady. It's the duty of my darling to love me all her life. Could an engineer look after or obey me? Remember, dear, that you're my wife. Your mother was an engineer. You owe it to the kids to be a lady. Dainty as a dish rag, faithful as a chow. Stay at home, you got to mind the baby. Remember, you're a mother now. Well, every time I turn around, there's something else to do. Cook a meal, mend a sock, sweep a floor or two. I listen in to Jimmy Young, it makes me want to spew. I was gonna be an engineer. You know, I really wish that I... Is he still around? You know what? They'll say that about me one of these days. You know, I really wish that I could be a lady. I could do the lovely things that a lady's supposed to do. I wouldn't even mind if only they would pay me. And I could be a person too. What price for a woman? You buy her for a ring of gold. To love and obey without any pay. You get your cook and your nurse. For better or worse, you don't need your purse when the lady is sold. Ah, but now the times are harder when the chimney's got the sack. I went down to Pickers, they were glad to have me back. But I'm a first-class citizen, my wages tell me that. And I'm a first-class engineer. The boss, he says, we pay you as a lady. You know you only got the job, cause I can't afford a man. With you, I keep the profits high as maybe. You're just a cheaper pair of hands. You've got one fault, you're a woman. You're not worth the equal pay. A bit you're a tart, you're nothing but hard. Shallow and vain, you got no brain. You even go down the drain like a lady today. Well, I listened to my mother and I joined a typing pool. I listened to my lover and I put him through school. But if I listen to the boss, I'm just a bloody fool and an underpaid engineer. I've been a sucker ever since I was a baby. As a daughter, as a wife, as a mother and a dear. But I fight them as a woman, not a lady. Fight them as an engineer.
That was Peggy Seeger. I was going to be an engineer. You listen to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. Send us money. It's going to help us pay for the equipment and the rent. Number to send it to, or I should say the place to go, is www.freakradio.org or Post Office Box 7507 95061. I don't get any of it, but people who keep the station running do, and I'm glad they do. Here is your mayor again, Ryan Coonerty. He'll be mayor for the next 2 weeks, and then hopefully in a week or two he will not be returned to office. And that really is one of the objectives I see here as being a legitimate and kind of inspiring focus in this election, is to get rid of Ryan Coonerty. You're going to get people who are nearly just as bad. But if you get rid of Ryan Coonerty, you're sending a message that the merchants and their private security force don't control the city. The developer, it's not going to be given away to developers. It's not going to be given away to the university. It's not going to be the private preserve of, you know, those who happen to have the inner track to the City Council's Downtown Issues Task Force that meets behind closed doors, Matthews, Coonerty, and Robinson, who suddenly give dictates to the police to crack down downtown. Perhaps people like Sergeant Lamas won't be so quick to break the arms of people like the 60-year-old Donna Dice, the elderly woman, the disabled woman who got her arm broken on May 9th, and who, instead of getting the attention she needs and getting the support she needs, is herself going to court for, quote, resisting arrest. And the same officer who did it, Sergeant Christian Lamas, is harassing other people downtown, by the reports I'm getting, and it played on Free Radio Santa Cruz. And Coonerty is just fine with this. He's on the Public Safety Committee that's supposed to oversee the police department, and the result of all this is zero oversight. I don't think he really cares much one way or the other. It's kind of a political tool. It's kind of an opportunity to get elected and go to higher office. I mean, that's my suspicion. It's sort of like Emily Riley. She wanted to be, you know, assemblywoman. I think probably Coonerty does too. We want to get rid of Coonerty the same way we got rid of Kennedy and Premack in 2004. I'm not suggesting we support anybody else particularly, though. As I said, you give a look to Cabrera, Kenyatta, and Canada, the three Ks, if you will, although I think it's actually 1K and 2Cs. But get rid of Coonerty. That's 1C we do not need. More cops on the street. If you like that, then vote for Ryan Coonerty. Coonerty is one of the people who backed, along with the rest of the city council, massive increase in the police power in the Poganip against poor and homeless people up there, violating the federal constitution and hopefully setting us up for a large lawsuit that'll slap them back, as the Fresno City and the Caltrans were 2.3 million slapped back because they seized and destroyed homeless property the way Ranger John Wallace, Chief Ranger John Wallace, is doing now. Regularly, as I understand it, unless his policies have changed. I haven't heard about it, but I don't think so. I think I would have heard about it if the policies had changed. Anyway, here's Coonerty again at this forum. He's being asked this question.
The next person who will answer first is Ryan Coonerty, and we will go the other way. So from you, Ryan, will go to Don.
All right.
The next question. If elected, what will be your first priority and why?
If elected, my first priority will be to try to build the economy here. The fact is, we can't have a place, can't be a community where people have to drive elsewhere to live because they can't afford to live here, to shop, to work, to raise their kids or retire. And the community I grew up in was a community where people were able to do those things, and it was a live community. We weren't a bedroom community for San Jose. In order to make that happen, we need to create more jobs here. We need to revitalize the West Side. We're doing some really important things over there, whether it's the digital media factory in Lipton's, or the food clusters in Wrigley's, or the incubator with the university in Lipton's. We're bringing a new hotel stock, making sure that downtown is clean and safe for people to shop in, getting units that people can buy into at a low rate, a relatively low rate, so they can get a foothold in this real estate market. All those things to make sure that Santa Cruz is a sustainable community for the long run.
And what I'm doing here is I'm giving you Coonerty's own, 1 minute best shot as to, what his priorities are. And certainly it sounds, credible, good, offhand. I am not a person who can really knowledgeably speak about these particular projects. I do know that renters have not gotten any better a deal from anything Coonerty's done. In terms of some subsidized housing or some so-called affordable housing, which isn't really affordable for most workers, no workers in Santa Cruz, he hasn't done much. He's acting like he's this big leader who's done stuff. And I don't want to... I have some very strong feelings about some of the things he's done that I disagree with, but I don't want to take away from any real accomplishments he's done. So, if any of Ryan Coonerty's friends or supporters or people who know him want to bring this message to him, I've written him again and again, he's invited to come into the studio and talk about his accomplishments. I would also like to have a knowledgeable critic on these issues, because I'm knowledgeable in some areas of city government, mostly around the police and how policies impact poor people, but not in others. So we need to have that happen. But that is something that he has been repeatedly invited to do, and he's repeatedly refused. He doesn't believe in a transparent government. He doesn't make his emails, his schedule public. I think he does make he did change his email policy, which I think was commendable. A number of city council members will not let you see their emails. I think I have this right. I could be wrong about this. But some city council members manage it so that when people are addressing them in emails to city council members so-and-so, they route it to their house, and then they say, oh, it's private. But, of course, it's not. If it's being addressed to a city council member as an email, it is a public communication in the sense that it is amenable to Public Records Act requests. So you can't have private deals with city council members and express opinions privately. You can do so anonymously, of course. You can talk to the person quietly, and that's not revealable. But if you're making communications that are online or written, or you have appointments with that person and you're a lobbyist, that should be public. But, of course, it isn't. Now, I found out recently, there's a full disclosure from Peter Scheer of the First Amendment Coalition, that though the First Amendment Coalition has been struggling to require mayors like Rotkin and Riley and Matthews and Coonerty, mayors of California towns generally, to make their appointment calendars public and their schedule of upcoming public appearances public, that is not yet explicitly required by the Sunshine Act. We need to make it required. But as I understand it from my conversations with Peter Scheer, that's not required at the moment. So I've been constantly saying, and apparently misstating the fact, that it has been required, but apparently it's not. Again, I haven't gone directly to the law and researched it myself, but that's the information I get from somebody who spends a lot of time working on these issues, who's a worker with the First Amendment Coalition. And I think that's really a pity. And I also think it may mean that I've been misinforming people on the subject, for which I apologize if that's true. I may be able to get more accurate information. But certainly, I think it should be required if it isn't required now. I'm going to try to spin ahead to cover just very, very briefly another part of the City Council candidate forum from last night that kind of illustrates, well, some different reactions to the question of downtown and that question which came up. And in order to do that, I first want to give myself a moment. You know, I don't know actually if I'm going to have time to do that, so I think what I'll do is I will postpone that for a time on Sunday when I have more time. Generally, that'll be 9:30 to 1 in the morning, 1 in the afternoon, 9:30 in the morning to 1 in the afternoon when I have a show on Sunday. And occasionally I come in early and do flashbacks, and I think actually maybe we get maybe getting some interesting flashbacks because I have a whole box full of microtapes that I now have access to, which may actually be playable in the studio because I may have the proper connection. I'm not entirely clear on that, but I think I might. And for those of you who like to wander through yesteryear and look at how things were 10 or 15 years ago compared with how they are now, it's interesting to do that. What I do want to do also, though, before I run out of time, and I have about 15 minutes left in the show, is hit on a couple of articles, which I found of interest. Here's an article by Todd Chrétien. If only McCain's charges were true, why I'm not voting for Obama. And here is, if I can find probably the best thing I'm going to do is to try to pull up the website for this particular deal. And I'll do that. This is a Counterpunch article, counterpunch.org, which is a website I frequent, and encourage you to take a look at it too, www.counterpunch.org. And it's by Todd Chrétien, Why I'm Not Voting for Obama. And it reads as follows. Terrorist, kill him, he's an Arab. Obama bucks. John McCain has let the dogs loose. Apparently he's decided that if winning the White House means whipping the right wing into a racist frenzy, he'll lead the charge. The good news is that a majority of American voters are walking away from the John McCain, Sarah Palin freak show. Even David Letterman is grilling McCain. In recent days, McCain even added the word socialist to Barack Obama's supposed list of sins. You see, Obama believes in redistributing wealth, not in policies that help us all make more of it, said McCain. At least in Europe, the socialist leaders who so admire my opponent are upfront about their objectives. They use real numbers and honest language, and we should demand equal candor from Senator Obama. Just this once, I find myself wishing that something McCain says were true. Yet any serious look at Obama's record and platform signal that he tends to govern well within the mainstream of American politics. To begin with, there are his stated policies. He wants to keep at least 50,000 troops in Iraq to, quote, fight terrorism, unquote, indefinitely. And he wants to send those who are withdrawn from Iraq to fight in Afghanistan. He agrees with John McCain that the size and budget of the American military must be increased. He stridently supports Israel's suppression of the Palestinian people, and he has said me too to reasserting American military might in Latin America, being especially hostile to Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez. Obama would be the first to repudiate the idea that he is any sort of anti-militarist or anti-imperialist, and we should take him at his word. Domestically, Obama recognizes, unlike McCain, that the era of reckless deregulation and neoliberal supremacy has run its course. His policies will aim to reestablish order between the hostile band of brothers, as Marx called competing capitalists. Yet no serious look at Obama's policies indicates a plan to fundamentally reshape the American class system. As Malcolm X once said, you don't stick a knife in a man's back 9 inches and then pull it out 6 inches and say you're making progress. Obama may support some modest economic band-aids, extending unemployment benefits, for example. He'll most likely make some reasonable policy shifts, undoing the craziest of the Republican excesses, especially those that don't cost much. For instance, he'll appoint centrists to the Supreme Court if he gets the chance, although the justices most likely to retire are liberals or centrists anyway. Obama will also end George Bush's ban on stem cell research. And he'll take modest steps to deal with global warming. He might even reduce the number of anti-immigrant raids by the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE. But even if Obama has his way at every point, by the end of his first term in 2012, the schools will remain underfunded, the prisons overcrowded, and the gap between rich and the working class more or less unchanged. Compared to the last 8 years of Bush, any change will be seen as a good thing. Obama's modest reforms will most likely earn him a honeymoon for a longer or shorter period of time. He also has the advantage that the Republican Party finds itself deeply divided, and these divisions will only increase if McCain loses badly. But the modest changes Obama has promised fall far short of what is needed. Ongoing wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and economic crisis will form the backdrop to Obama's first term. This calls for far more radical measures than Obama has contemplated, even in the most generous reading of his intentions. This reality requires a serious political discussion about how to build a working class movement that can change the rules of the game, and it's in this context that the question of whether those who want to work for social change should vote for Obama must be discussed. First, some historical perspective is needed. If the opinion poll trends hold up, McCain's racist strategy will lose, and Obama will be elected the first African-American president. In a nation built on slavery, this will be an historic accomplishment and a cause to celebrate for every genuine opponent of racism and bigotry of all kinds. This point deserves emphasis. America's economic wealth was literally extracted from the backs and minds of more than 10 generations of black slaves. This wealth wasn't incidental to the nation's fortunes. Without slavery, there would have been no riches for northern merchants and bankers, and no boom in northern industry. It took a ferocious civil war to abolish slavery, a conflict that demonstrated the tenacity of the slave owner's defense of that system. The freed slaves achieved a 10-year period of partial democracy and reform in the South during Reconstruction. Defended by heavily armed troops, they elected hundreds of African Americans to state legislatures and Congress. This Southern Revolution was drowned in blood, so that as the KKK lynched its way into power, leading to 80 years of apartheid-like legal segregation, the heroic and bloody struggles of the civil rights movement finally broke Jim Crow's back, paving the way to voting rights, affirmative action in education and jobs, the creation of a black middle class, and the possibility of Barack Obama's campaign. All this is often discussed as ancient history, yet it is worth remembering that when Barack Obama was born in 1961, millions of African Americans were still legally barred from voting in the South. Even when this history is acknowledged, it is often asserted that the wrongs have been righted and black people should stop complaining, as if the racist taunts shouted out at McCain rallies aren't buttressed by a powerful system of institutional racism which guarantees that African Americans disproportionately go to the poorest schools, suffer the highest unemployment rate, and account for 50% of the nation's 2 million prisoners, although they contribute just 13% of the population. Obama's election will raise the hopes of millions of black workers across the country. Those who have suffered the brunt of American capitalism and its most important tool, racism, will have a justifiable sense of pride at Obama's rise. And for those who believe that the white working class can be won over to the fight against racism in the interest of class-based solidarity, Election Day will show that even when offered the chance to vote along racial lines, first by Hillary Clinton and then by John McCain, tens of millions of white workers from all parts of the country will vote for Barack Obama instead. None of this ends racism, but it certainly demonstrates the potential for interracial unity in the working class. Historically, the American left has faced this dilemma: to try to transform the Democratic Party or to try to build an alternative to its left. During the last Great Depression, this choice was posed in particularly stark terms, and although history never repeats itself, there are some important lessons to be learned from what happened then. The stock market crash in October 1929 led to bank failures, factory closures, and skyrocketing unemployment, as well as a rising level of working class anger, and eventually strikes, protests, union drives, and all kinds of social protests. The 1932 election of Franklin Delano Roosevelt has important parallels to Obama's campaign. He won in a landslide, replacing an unpopular and out-of-touch Republican administration by promising a New Deal. However, like Obama's call for change, the content of that New Deal was meager when Roosevelt promised it on the campaign trail. It was mostly designed to shore up the banks and business while offering small reforms for workers and the poor. Yet the combination of anger and hope proved electric. Between 1934 and 1937, millions of workers went on strike and created the most powerful unions in U.S. history. In that struggle, the American Communist Party grew from 7,000 members in 1929 to 80,000 by 1938. At first, it seemed like the working class movement and Roosevelt were headed in the same direction. As workers got more radical and organized, Roosevelt was forced to deliver more reforms. Social Security, the National Labor Relations Act, the Works Progress Administration Jobs Program, unemployment insurance, and so forth. In fact, it seemed so obvious to many political radicals that Roosevelt and the working class were headed in the same direction that when the Communist Party dropped its opposition to the Democratic Party on orders from Moscow and became Roosevelt's biggest champion in 1935-36, very few complained. But as the unions and the Communist Party came to see defending Roosevelt from the Republicans as the central priority, they began to oppose the kind of strikes and street actions necessary to continue the process of winning ever more radical reforms for fear of scaring the center. Once this dynamic became dominant, the movement began to fall apart. The abandonment of this independence destroyed the possibilities of building an independent labor party, one that could stand for workers' rights, consistently fight racism, and oppose U.S. wars abroad. And when Roosevelt, the Democratic Party, and big funders who really ran the party felt threatened by the demands of the unions, Roosevelt preemptively turned against the movement. On Memorial Day 1937, just months after Roosevelt won re-election with the overwhelming support of organized labor, police shot and killed 10 striking steelworkers in Chicago. It was then that FDR issued his infamous "A Plague on Both Your Houses" remark about the strike, which gave the green light to the bosses to use violence against the union movement. By 1938, the New Deal's economic policies had utterly failed to end the Depression. Instead, there was a dramatic worsening of the economy. At this point, Roosevelt turned toward building a massive war machine to fight the Second World War. This would include developing and dropping the atomic bomb in the interest of spreading the American empire to Europe, Africa, the Middle East, and Asia. The Democrats, having sidetracked the possibility of breaking the two-party cycle in the 1930s, then helped launch the anti-communist McCarthyite crusade, a war in Korea, the Cold War with the USSR, and eventually the war in Vietnam. No one has a crystal ball, but it appears that global capitalism is entering a historic period of crisis. The question of how to use the opportunities that will open up so that we don't repeat the mistakes of the left made in the 30s will be crucial if we want a different outcome this time. I believe that voting and giving political support to Barack Obama and the Democratic Party would weaken the fight for a fundamentally different kind of world, a socialist world. Arguing against a vote for Obama and the Democrats is not political abstention, however. It is part of a larger strategy that argues positively to continue building a socialist movement based on the independence of the working class from the two mainstream parties. There are many dedicated activists who will disagree with this point of view. They will look forward, above all, to seeing the Republicans defeated after 8 long years of George Bush. But can they make a positive case that Obama and the Democrats will take us closer to breaking the domination of the rich over the working class in this country? The fact that millions of American workers look set to elect the first black president is a good barometer of what could be, but it's no substitute for systematic political debate and the patient building of social movements, socialist organization, and practical action. That's an article by Todd Chrétien, who is the 2006 Green Party candidate for U.S. Senate from California. He writes for The Socialist Worker. Whether you believe you're in socialism, in anarchism, in liberalism, in progressive, whatever you believe in, the isms aren't important. The issue has to do with real changes and real policies as to who controls the wealth in the country, who controls the power, what we're doing abroad. And that's what we need to be thinking about November 3rd, November 4th, November 5th, November 6th, and every day after, regardless of which of these clowns wins the election. I'm going to kind of leave it there. Encourage people to come to the Human Rights Organization on Saturday if they're interested in the local issues around criminalization of the poor downtown, community control of police. Political candidates have been invited to come to these meetings for their endorsement. I think Craig Canada has been invited. I'm not sure if he's been invited or not, but he's been invited to our Huff meetings. The city council race is less important, as I say, than the sense of what you really want, the changes you really want to see that aren't being discussed by any of the candidates. That's what you need to really think about, because we're entering a very serious and difficult time economically in Santa Cruz, it sounds like, although, you know, you don't see much indication of it yet.
you know, people are still, businesses aren't closing. The storefronts, though some of them are empty, are not any emptier than they were a week or two ago. But the stock market is dropping, and things are shutting down in terms of credit, and it's something that, you know, I, again, don't pretend to have a lot of expertise on, but I see it happening, and I suspect that a lot of people I know are going to be in a lot of trouble, and we need to get together on these issues, whether it means helping each other with tent cities or dealing with foreclosures and rent evictions. Whatever it means, we need to get together and start doing that. Think about that. Get in touch with Huff if you'd like to help fight civil rights fights in terms of restoring rights of homeless people, which we've been trying to do for years. Give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And I'll be back on Sunday morning, probably about 9:30. We can talk some more. Don't wait for me. Do your own talking. Thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides.
Time ferry me down queen of light took her bow, and then she turned to gold. The prince of peace embraced the gloom and walked the night. Rich from tender care, repaid do not.